This is Daim Shabazz of the Chess Drum, and it is April 20th, 2012. And we have on the line Adisa Banjoko of the Hip Hop Chess Federation. How you doing, brother?
Pretty good, man. I'm honored to be on, as always. Very excited to talk with you.
So tell us, you've just recently celebrated the fifth anniversary of the Hip Hop Chess Federation. For those who don't know about the Hip Hop Chess Federation, can you give us a little background on the organization and how it started and what motivated you to start such a project?
Well, the Hip Hop Chess Federation is the world's first nonprofit that fuses music, chess, and martial arts to promote unity, strategy, and nonviolence. I had this idea for a really long time in my head, but at the time I was just a rap dude and I liked hip hop. And, you know, my father taught me how to play chess probably when I was about 4 or 5. And I was never really that good at the game. I'm a super novice, you know, despite the growth that the org has had. You know, I'm not really an off the hook chess player. But I enjoy the game. I love the game, and it's fun. And I learned a lot of personal life things from playing, you know, with my father and my friends. So when hip hop, you know, really kind of was in its golden age period, you know, there are a lot of rappers that noted, you know, that mentioned chess and chess strategies and whatnot in their raps. And because I just love chess so much, I would always personally remember this stuff. And so what ended up happening was I've written two independent books called Lyrical Swords Volume 1 and Lyrical Swords Volume 2. Finished Volume 1, I was working on Volume 2. I had the opportunity to go to a juvenile hall and speak to the kids about being a writer for like a career day kind of thing in San Francisco. So I went over there, and the kids really didn't care about writing. They just wanted to know what famous rappers I had met and things like that. And a lot of them were actually pretty disruptive. But what happens is I pulled out a chessboard and I said, hey, real quick, how many in here know how to play chess? You know, I'd say about 85% of the kids in the class raised their hand. Okay, well, let me see who in here thinks that they're the best. So I was like, all right, well, let's have a tournament, and whoever wins will get a book. And so we set up a tournament right then and there and just had kids play head-to-head. And there are a few things that I noticed. The first was that these two black kids were playing, and there was a white kid there. And when one of the black kids reached to move a piece, he said, don't move the horse. And the kid was like, shut up, white boy, you don't know nothing. And he went ahead and moved his horse, and then he lost the game. Everybody instantly had a lot more respect for the white kid. In the back of the room, there was a really overweight kid, and he said that he was the best. And when he said he was the best, they were like, shut up, fat boy. He was like, no, I'm really the best. I said, well, look, if you really think you're the best, come up here and get in the game. And he actually won the tournament. Okay. And I saw the pecking order and respect level change in social groups, in racial groups. And as I'm standing there, what do you think is going through my mind? Like every rap song I ever heard that dealt with chess. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I got to do something with this. When I did Lyrical Swords Volume 2, I was lucky enough to interview RZA, GZA, and Maurice Ashley. And, you know, I knew then that I really wanted to do something strong with, you know, the tournament aspect of it. And so in 2006, we were actually created, but we didn't do our first event until 2007. And around the time that had happened, I had been trying to interview Josh Waitzkin, who had been overseas. I think he was in China doing his Tai Chi World Championships. But I didn't know that at the time. I just knew he wasn't calling me back. Mm-hmm. So around the time we got ready to get things going, he called me back. And he was like, hey, man, I know you wanted to see if you could interview me. I know I'm probably late, but, man, well, you know, the book is done, but I really appreciate you calling me. Here's what I'm doing. And I got this thing going on called the Hip Hop Chess Federation. And it deals a lot with, you know, chess and martial arts. And he was like, well, I just finished a book on that. You know what I mean? And I was like, really? And so, like, he, you know, Josh and I hit it off very well because of all of the years that I had been writing about hip hop for The Source, for Vibe, for XXL, for All Hip Hop. I had a good enough relationship with a lot of the people who do rap music that are into chess that it was actually easier for me to get this thing going than I thought. I work at a school called John O'Connell in San Francisco, which is in the Mission Kids over there. But that school is in a war zone, man. Between Latin gangs, the North Daniels and the Sereños, and there's a little bit of MS-13. But the school I work at is predominantly Latino, but it has a lot of African Americans. It's very diverse. But I'm just trying to save lives with the game, man. I'm not too wrapped up in competition, but those that want to compete, I help them, you know, get that opportunity.
You've had 5 years of activities. I know I attended one of the events that you had that featured RZA, GZA, and a number of other rap artists. The one I attended was very successful, and you've had several others. What is your goal of these activities that you're organizing?
Really what it was in the beginning, and that's to have fun with the game, to expose more kids in the streets to the game, and expose them to more of the life strategies. The whole time I was doing this thing, man, it was really just pretty much me and my wife. I had a partner named Leo when we first started, but right after that event that you came to, where RZA played for the heavyweight belt, he was getting ready to have a kid, and so he had to pull out and do his fatherhood thing, and I completely respected that. So then it was just really like me and my wife. As the economy continued to worsen, funding wasn't there, and it was really just simply that it was a bad time for the economy, but the organization was so much of a hybrid that I think certain companies and brands didn't understand what we were doing. You know what I mean? Like, we're really, I mean, and I respect that. I mean, to those brands, we were doing almost too much, you know? So it's like, we can either do hip hop chess or we could do the skateboarding event. Everybody's going to go with the skateboarding event because they get it. Because of people like RZA and Rocka, you know, Rocka put a lot of his own time and money, and so did RZA. You know, he's helped promote the org and help us throw events. And Gumby at Heroes Martial Arts and some of the other people, you know, volunteering their time, you know, we've been able to tread water, and that's gotten us to this point where we're really pushing forward. So now, through the pro bono program at K&L Gates, I'm working with an attorney named David Frazee, who I was introduced to through Josh Waitzkin, and he helped us get our 501c3 formally filed. It took a really long time, and it was pretty crazy, but we got it done. And so, you know, really what we're hoping to do is get our own building so we can do after school tutoring as well as chess, as well as, you know, self-defense classes for kids, and really just get a safe place for them to figure out who they want to be and help them achieve that. I mean, I'm talking about getting kids into college, and I'm talking about getting kids into trade schools.
Right.
And I'm talking about them actualizing their own potential.
Now, yeah. If I asked you to describe the concept of the Hip Hop Chess Federation in terms of hip hop, chess, and martial arts, a lot of people would want to try to understand what the organization is. If you can just describe the concepts of merging these three arts together, how would you just describe it briefly?
Well, I would say the first thing is that what we're trying to do is use these arts to help children find themselves and then help them develop life strategies to actualize the highest essence of who they want to be after they discover that true self. Now, because a lot of people don't understand the history of chess, and they certainly don't understand the history of martial arts, it is so confusing to a lot of people that these things have connections, but they have very deep, authentic connections. And so, you know, we always talk about RZA, GZA, and Wu-Tang, and we should, because they are the pinnacle of the discussion of hip-hop and rap music. I mean, hip-hop and chess, you know what I'm saying? They have a lot of songs about it. They live it. They love it, okay? But really, when you're looking at the earliest songs that deal with chess, you're going to be talking about Public Enemy. You're going to be talking about a ton of other rap groups, EPMD. And then beyond that, you're going to have a lot of underground artists. What I think a lot of parents are afraid of is, you know, when they think of rap music, they're thinking of a lot of the sexist, violent stuff that they see on mainstream television. And what they don't understand is that hip hop is so big that there's such a vast group of artists out there, that there are tons of artists who make a decent living making rap music that are just simply never seen in the mainstream. And so you have artists like Mortal Technique on his album, The Third World. When you look on the back cover of that album, he's playing chess in an alleyway with his DJ. You know, and there's a lot of chess imagery in hip hop. And so all I'm trying to do are take the best practices from that, connect it to chess, the actual game, and inspire kids to play, and then use that as a metaphor for life strategies. Now, the way that martial arts fits in is that hip hop also celebrates a lot about the martial arts. And again, Wu-Tang is the pinnacle of that discussion. But again, you know, because of the inspiration of Bruce Lee and Kung Fu films, DJ culture inside hip hop, and the battle elements of hip hop, you know, in the rap and the DJing and the graffiti, it inspires a lot of discipline. It inspires a lot of courage. And in regards to self-defense, you know, we do a lot of anti-bullying work. You know, last year I did my first women's self-defense class at John O'Connell, and I taught a little more than 100 females basic foundational jiu-jitsu concepts, about self-defense. And it was such a beautiful thing because, you know, what a lot of Americans don't understand is that if you say, oh, my son likes jiu-jitsu, or my son trains in boxing, or my son trains in karate or capoeira, what happens is most people who hear that think, oh, Daim's son must like to fight.
Right.
What they don't understand is that it's because Daim's son trains in capoeira or boxing or jiu-jitsu that he doesn't fight. And so beyond the health aspect, America, in an America where most of our kids spend far too much time on Xboxes pretending to play soccer than actually on the field, I think that it's good to have martial arts out there, improving the kids' health, improving their sense of self-esteem, and making the streets safer, because kids who are involved in martial arts are not the ones who are out there fighting in the street.
Now, you recently had an article, or there was an article written about the Hip Hop Chess Federation, and you made the cover of Chess Life, and it's actually a very lengthy article. I'm looking at it now. What has been the response of that article?
Man, you know, I got to say, I'm very thankful to Daniel Lucas, you know, Eric Arnold, the guy that wrote the story, and everybody at Chess Life who make that happen. You know, we've had a great response from that. Not long after that article came out, Cosner over at Forbes.com did a story on us. I think that the response has been very well. I think that it's helped people understand who we are. You know, it happens that I thought was unique to the Bay, but apparently it's a national epidemic inside the chess community, is there's an immense amount of infighting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I got a lot of cold shoulders when I went to certain chess events, and other times I was embraced very, very well by people in the local Bay Area chess community. What I've always tried to help a lot of other chess clubs understand is that the Hip Hop Chess Federation is not in competition with them. But I think because of our press influence and how much we're seen in the news and whatnot, a lot of chess clubs think that we're trying to, quote unquote, take their kids. And they don't understand that we're trying to expose the kids who already play chess to other aspects of the game that can enrich their life. And we're also trying to get the kids who may flirt with chess in the streets with their friends to understand the deeper elements and beauty of it and absorb some of that. So I think it's been a good tool to help the American chess clubs and the real competitive organizations understand our mission better. And that's made me feel really good.
Okay, well, I know you've had a couple of individuals that, particularly Dahemia Young, who got a lot of press after she attended the Susan Polgar tournament. Can you tell us a little bit about her story? And if you can, give us kind of an update if you know what she's doing at this time.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a really fun story. I mentor a lot of kids in San Francisco, and she is just one of them. But, you know, she's got an amazing level of resilience in her heart, you know. But, you know, long story short, I met her a couple years ago. I started kind of mentoring her just in general. She said that she liked chess. She said she wanted to play chess. If you go online, there's a thing that's about the HHCF Queens Invitational. And you'll see like author Marilyn Yalom and you'll see some female rappers, and you'll see Gene Hoffman from Nine Queens on this panel.
Mm-hmm.
First time she competed, and she did well. You know, but she has a genuinely tough life. You know, her home life is a little crazy and unstable, and it affects her school, right? Like, you can expect that, right? Like, if a kid's home life is a little unstable, you can expect their schoolwork to be a little unstable. But, you know, she persevered through a lot of triumphs and tragedies. And towards the end of the school year, I noticed that her playing, like, if you're playing with Dahemia and things are going good for her, she can really be killing you. But if things are stressful for her, she's distracted, she gets killed easy, she's not confident in the way that she builds her pieces, and you can see it. Mm-hmm. So I noticed these kinds of things before the summer hit. So there was a volunteer for the Hip Hop Chess Federation on the East Coast who had been in contact with Susan Polgar, and Susan Polgar had reached out to that volunteer and said, you know, if you guys wanted to send someone from the HHCF to come play, you know,
you know, we could help make that happen for this female tournament that we're having down in Texas. So, I couldn't find Dahemia. I couldn't find her anywhere. Most of the people that I knew, students and adults who knew where she was normally, just simply didn't, have access to her. So this volunteer helped and, went ahead and we found Dahemia. So, what happens is, first we couldn't find her. Then we found her. She was in a group home. I never even saw her before she left.
Okay.
We talked a bit. She hadn't been playing chess at all because she was purely on survival mode, you know? I mean, purely on survival mode. And she was like, you know, what if I go out there and I get killed? What happens if this? What happens if that? I haven't been playing. I was like, you know what? You might as well go because you need to get out of this group home you're in. You need to be around new people. I want you to be around positive girls that are doing things with their lives. I want you to be on a college campus because I need you to go to the college at some point. That's my hope for you. And what if you lose every game, but you meet the person who can get you into like Boston University or something? I mean, if that happens, then you actually won. So she was like, all right, I'm going to go. So she goes out there, again, completely unprepared. You know, one of the things that people don't know is, you know, right the night before she left, you know, because of the attention that she was getting in the group home, she was actually attacked by one of the girls in the group home physically. And because, you know, they were trying to mark her face because they knew she was going to be in the press and they wanted her to take photos injured. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
This is the kind of crabs in a barrel reality that the kids that I work with, you know, deal with all the time. Okay. So nevertheless, being the strong young girl she is, she got up, she got on the plane, she came out, you know, there was a story in the LA Times about it. And, Jada Pinkett Smith kicked in some money to help her get there. You know, Raka donated to help her get in there. Jupiter Jiu-Jitsu helped. A lot of unknown individuals got on deck to make that happen. And she got out there and she was pretty much by herself. Luckily, while she was out there, you know, Diamond Shakur's father had come across her and he knew a little bit about her story. And her and Diamond, you know, met up pretty well because she went from just being in this group home out of contact with most of her friends to being in newspapers, to being in Texas. And she hadn't been pressing at all, really, you know? Mm-hmm. So she did okay. She didn't have her most spectacular gaming experience, but it was a great personal life experience. And she walked away with what I was told was a $40,000 scholarship to Texas Tech. And I was really proud of that. I've taken a few college courses and I've written a lot and I've read a lot, but I have a college degree. Even though I've lectured at Harvard, I've lectured at Brown. I've lectured at Stanford. I've lectured at UC Berkeley and SF State. When I found out about her scholarship, I mean, I cried a little, you know, for real, because I want to give lots of kids like her that opportunity. So, but what happened is because of a lot of the press, there were a lot of people who were attracted to her now that didn't know her in the beginning. And I believe that they had their own intentions in the way that they engaged her. I felt like they were trying to push her in the spotlight in unnatural ways for their own reason that weren't beneficial to her. You know, there were movie people calling, there were TV show people calling, and it was getting a little weird. I didn't like any of it because all I really wanted her to do was come back, finish so that she could take that scholarship.
Well, in terms of the HHCF, you have ambitions to expand beyond the Bay Area. Do you have any plans for any other cities in the immediate future?
Well, it's funny, you know. I've been very lucky. Well, the short answer to that is yes, we do. Okay. What I had to do though is, again, I started this stuff from my own brain, plugging stuff together and trying to connect people I knew to get to a point where we could really be doing stuff, right? Then I needed to know that it worked in the Bay. You know, I had some people who wanted me to take it to London and some people who wanted me to take it to some other countries. But I said, you know what? I can't do that because I'm trying to be a truthful person. And I need to know that it works for American kids before I go to any other country and try to, you know what I mean? Try to have an impact when I don't even understand the cultural dynamics in that country.
Right.
So, I've reached that point, but then now what I had to do is really kind of codify what I'm actually teaching so that I can export it to other people who want to be involved. And you know what? A lot of people have called me. People from Philadelphia, people from New York, people from Florida, people from LA, people from Chicago, people from New Orleans. There's a huge demand for what we do. And I think I was kind of torn personally and professionally between creating an actual methodology, right? So that it's not just some cool guy talking to kids all day, and testing all of this stuff so that I know it worked. And so that's what a lot of my time at John O'Connell has been. Every Monday, I teach a class now called Live the Game. And it's a part of a new book that I'm working on, in part with David Frazee, who's the attorney, from K&L Gates. He worked a lot with Josh. He has a huge database of chess positions. I've outlined, a lot of life philosophies and how they relate to chess. And so he plugs in the positions. I plug in the philosophy, and it's also going to have some really cool artwork in there and some really cool interviews. Like, so half the book is going to be position and philosophy. Half the book is going to be essays and interviews of my own reflections on the connections between music, chess, and martial arts. And so, you know, I think that should be ready in about 6 months. I'm about halfway done. I've just got to tie in some other things. And I think once that happens and they start to really understand the connections and the reality of the philosophies inside, that it'll be easier to export. I don't want to sell kids a dream. I don't want to sell parents a myth. I want to actually help people.
Yeah, I think looking at the Hip Hop Chess Federation and it's in, I guess, its evolution over 5 years, there has been a lot of excitement, because I think a lot of people see chess, hip hop, and martial arts, and you alluded to this earlier, as kind of being strange bedfellows, that they don't really go together. But then when they see this concept, there's a lot of excitement. And I think you're right in that if you have people coming to you saying, I want to do this, and, you know, can I lead a branch here? I mean, you have to be very careful, because they may end up taking it in a direction that you don't want it to go. And once it goes in a certain direction, it's really hard to retrench that energy back, you know?
It is. And it's scary. You have a lot of other people who try to tie hip hop and chess to political things that have nothing to do with me and what I represent. They try to tie them to religious things that have nothing to do with me and what I'm trying to do. You know, I want people to be who they are. When you sit down at a chess board, it does not care that you're black or white. It does not care that you're a male or a female. It does not care whether you're rich or you're poor. It doesn't care. So I can't afford to care. When you're able to reach out to RZA and Jizza, when you're able to reach out to Josh, when you're able to reach out to a lot of other MCs like Raka, and you're able to reach out to the Gracie family locally and in LA and back east, that feels good. I've got the support of people like you and other folks that makes me feel like I'm on the right path. So I'm just trying to be as efficient as possible so that this works for the kids, because our schools are really broken. These kids are poor and they're really hungry. You know, poverty is a huge part of violence. And I didn't realize that as much because I'm a suburban black kid. I didn't realize coming out of the suburbs how much poverty was affecting violence, even though I knew a lot about MLK. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until working at this school that I saw how much of a root poverty plays in youth violence. If you look up News One, the word news1.com, you put my name in, I just wrote two pieces about the effect of the constant young murders have on these kids, you know, because they have, like, all these kids are undiagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay. And then you're still trying to get them to learn in school.
Yeah.
When they're shell-shocked from bullets all night. You know, I'm talking about kids who deal with real guerrilla warfare. Let me give you an example. All right. Because I'm not one of these cats. You have people who call themselves activists, and I don't consider myself an activist. I'm just a guy who cares about the community. I'm not an activist. But you have people who call themselves activists. They come from these really cool colleges, but really they just talk on college campuses about kids that they never talk to. I talk to these kids every day. I work with them every day. 2 weeks ago, a kid's talking to me about how he lives on one side of this neighborhood and there's a clear view to this other neighborhood that they don't get along with. Okay. And he's telling me that one night they're sitting outside and they're standing on a corner and they see a guy set up a tripod and a rifle, and he starts using a scope, shooting above their head on the light pole that they're standing under. Bullets are ringing out and everybody kind of runs and scatters. The next night, you know, and this kid's like 15 years old, okay? He goes back out, him and his friends are hanging out, and they see the guy setting his rifle up again. So he said they all ran back, got their own guns, and started shooting out the streetlights in their neighborhood because they didn't want to be seen, obviously, and shot. They didn't want the gunman to have a clear shot. Do you realize what that kid just explained is urban guerrilla warfare? Shooting out his own streetlights. That's the kind of life he lives between being in school. How well should we expect him to study? And while he's telling me the story, a girl walks by. He was like, "Hey, girl, did you hear us last night? Did you hear us?" And she's like, "Hell yeah, I heard you." She was like, "Man, I was hella scared." And they're laughing. They think it's funny because it's a daily operation in the West Coast ghettos. All right. But what's happening in the West Coast ghettos ain't far from Chicago, ain't far from Florida, and any of the cities, Miami, all of that ain't far from New York. And these kids want a way out. And this is a kid that I mentor that I'm telling you about. So when I tell you these stories and when I write Live the Game and you see these live positions and you see these essays and you see me talking with these rappers and these kids about life and death and how it really affects them and how I'm using chess to help, I think that people will have a greater clarity and understanding of my sincerity here in this space.
I don't believe that your dedication is questioned. Anyone who puts this amount of time and effort that you have in 5 years, certainly you're not doing it for the bright lights and the cameras and the, you know, the TV interviews. And you just don't do this, you know, for that. It's a labor of love. And I think all of us have heard of similar stories in various cities, but it just so happens that you do have a silver lining. Sometimes you see a silver lining in the cloud. And the last week or so, there's been this story circulating about this middle school in Brooklyn, New York, called IS318. They just won the National High School Championship, and they are the first junior high school to win the high school championship. And this is in a very supposedly rough area with a lot of these kids who come from very underprivileged, quote unquote, underprivileged background. So there is some hope, and we're seeing chess do some amazing things. It is my hope that the HHCF would somehow find a bridge into the chess world. Not to say that HHCF should be a chess federation and should concentrate on holding a lot of tournaments, but I'd like to see the organization get more support from those who are on the competitive side of chess, because I think that in that way you would have more of a groundswell of support, and I think your ideas would get a lot of traction and a lot of acceptance. Even though some may say, okay, well, they're not about the improvement of chess, but I think you have a lot of people in the chess community that will take the idea to heart and say, this is a brother that's really doing something positive. Let's get behind him. You know, let's help him out. Let's help him expand this idea because it's something positive to do. And that's where I hope you're able to find that balance and to keep HHCF real, but at the same time, help get some mainstream support from some of the chess organizations that, you know, may be interested in your vision.
I have to say that I have been lucky in a lot of regards in the Bay. Like I've had a lot of resistance, but I've had a lot of love. And I just want to quickly shout out like Hal Bogner, Dr. Alan Kirshner, Salman Azhar, the Garb family. You know, there's a lot of people who come from the mainstream local chess community who've done a lot to help us. You know, Eric Schiller has done a lot to help us. And then we just had Ruth Herring come out to our 5-year anniversary and talk to the kids. And she was really excited with what she saw. And I hope to be doing more with her. Jen Shahadi wrote an early article on us, and we had a lot of support from Gene Hoffman. That stuff, it means a lot. You know, it means a lot. I hope that we are able to bring more kids from these communities into chess. And I was really excited about Brooklyn Castles, and I'm really happy for all of those kids. It's such an inspirational story. I was just reading on Forbes.com about them, and mm-hmm. I knew that they were working on that documentary, and I had seen the YouTube clip on, I think, the one kid, James, on that team. And, you know, that stuff is just beautiful, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to see the passion in their eyes mm-hmm. is beautiful. To see how excited they are, to see the empathy that they have for one another and the strength and courage that they express on a chessboard. I mean, that is beautiful stuff, man. That is beautiful stuff. And also, I got to shout out Principal L from Philly. You know what I'm saying? Me and him have played a lot of phone tag over the years, and he's always been really nice to us. And, you know, as well as you, you know, and so I'm excited on several planes to even be in the company of all of you is incredibly humbling. Especially knowing how horrible I am at the game.
Well, we've all been there.
but, you know, I mean, it is humbling, and it's a very exciting time. We're going to be doing something on May 18th for the kids at John O'Connell. It's going to be like a private event. We're going to have a few rappers come through, a few poets, play some games, kind of like an end of the school year jam, you know? And then on May 19th, on Malcolm X's birthday, I'm going to do a presentation about hip hop, chess, and martial arts to the Universal Zulu Nation, which is like the oldest hip hop organization on earth. And I was lucky enough to be one of the members of the first founders of the original chapters in the Bay Area, but that's Afrika Bambaataa's, you know, organization. And I'm excited to talk to the kids in San Jose from the Universal Zulu Nation on May 19th. And then I'm hoping to do some stuff in Oakland over the summer. And then later this year, if I can really pull this off, I really plan to finally have RZA come back out. You know, he's been doing all this stuff with his new movie and everything else, but hopefully before the end of this year, we'll have RZA, a new belt, new rappers come out, play a big thing out here, and we're gonna do it big. That's my plan.
Okay, well that sounds good, and I hope that I'm able to make that one as well. Well, that's all the questions I have. I know it's I know you got the little one crying in the background, so I know you need to get back and do the dad thing, but I enjoyed talking with you as usual, and we look forward to covering more of your events, and perhaps, as I said, I'll be able to get back out there in the Bay Area and attend one of your events.
No, that'd be great, man, and I just want to thank everybody who's ever helped the Hip Hop Chess Federation. I want to thank you, Daeem, because you do a lot of work to bring exposure to a lot of people in chess. You just the ideas that you bring, the way that you cover chess, I think is very important. It's very original. And I hope that we can support you more in what you do. I really want to shout out real quick. I want to shout out my wife, because we've been like Bonnie and Clyde doing this HHCF thing, and she's had my back so heavy. I couldn't do this interview justice if I didn't thank the Black Queen on the board. And you know, if anybody wants to reach out to me, my email is bishop@hiphopchessfederation.org, and I am on Twitter way too much at hiphopchess. So
okay.
You know, reach out to your boy, and I'm looking forward to doing more stuff and helping these kids. So if you're into that, reach out and we'll keep doing it.
Sounds good, bro. I appreciate the history lesson.
And it's always fun, man. We'll do it again, man. I promise. We're going to get you back out here, but next time you got to stay a day.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, I haven't been out on the West Coast too often, but next time I come out there, I plan to stay for at least a couple days, kind of kick it a little bit. And I remember having dinner with Pop Master Fable. That was after your event the last time, and man, that was memorable there.
Yeah, dude, he's awesome, man. Oh, one last shout out. Pop Master Fable's getting love. Christy Z, his wife, is getting love. And Emery Tate, man, he's giving a lot of love to the HHCF. We're going to try to get him out here when you come out, you know?
I think he's still out that way, right?
Yeah, he is. He stays out here in the Bay. I haven't connected with him yet, but I think my boy Sal's going to hook that up. So We'll get it together.
All right, cool. Okay, man. So we'll catch up. Weekend. All right, then.
Okay.
That's love.
Okay, that's well. Peace. That's love. Peace.